Everybody got nice backgrounds. That's crazy.
What's that? Well, he just got a curtain blind drawn down or some shit in the background.
Nice.
What's up, man?
Patio. There's some patio stuff happening out here. What's good with you, player? What's up?
Hey, man, I appreciate you doing this, bro.
Hey, man, of course. I'm glad you reached out to me. You know, I thought the streets didn't forget.
Nah. Hell no. Hey, this my homeboy Lee. He my assistant. He just gonna be helping, like popping up pictures and stuff like that when we talking about certain films and TV shows and stuff like that. Cool. You worked on. Hey man, first of all, shout out for coming on Urban Legends Podcast, man. We got Jesse T. Usher. I want you to know I created this platform because I wanted to celebrate people that I consider living legends and or making legendary moves out here in these streets to becoming a living legend. You somebody that, you know, I've been watching your career, man, and the moves that you're making from the box office hits to the starring on your own TV show. I'm like, man, this dude is getting it in, man. And when I met you, I'm like, this nigga can't be pretty and a nice dude. And I was like, God I'm like, the nigga's gorgeous and he's nice. I'm like, this shit, it's not fair. So, you know, I was like, you remind me of the first time I met Boris Kodjo. I said, nigga, you're beautiful. You're beautiful.
And nice as hell.
And nice as hell, man. So appreciate you coming on. Where you at right now?
I'm at the crib, man. I'm here in LA.
Okay. Where were you born and raised at?
I was born in PG County, Maryland, in Silver Spring, but I was raised in like Mitchellville, Laurel. I moved out close to Annapolis, like the capital, a little bit. Most people don't know anything about Maryland, or if they do, they only know Baltimore. They know Annapolis because of like the military presence, and that's really about it. So, you know, it's quiet, it's humble. That's probably why I'm so nice, because I know if this all goes wrong, I'm going to end up back in Maryland. So, like, I like it in LA, so, you know, let me act right. It's kind of one of those things. But that's where I'm from, man. There's really not much to say about Maryland, to be honest with you.
But, you know, the important thing is the reason why you will always be working, because people don't realize, like, relationships is how you stay working in Hollywood. True. And because you are such a genuinely nice person, is why people, like, you know, he's good to be around. You got good energy with you, and you know, that's something that's amazing. Hey man, when did you realize you were better looking than everybody?
I completely disagree. I disagree, man. Like, you know, it's you, everybody looks in the mirror and only really wow.
Yo, and where the cowboy hat came from? But it looked good. It looks good on you. And this is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, my. That was one of those photo shoots where the photographer made me just really start feeling myself. It was not supposed to be that at all. They had, like, baggy clothes and all these layers and stuff. And I was feeling that. And then it was a female. She had, like, this little pull-up bar thing. And she's like, just get on the pull-up bar and just do some stuff. And I was like, I can't do no pull-up bar with all these clothes on. She was like, well, just take your shirt off. Let's just see. Next thing I know, the whole photo shoot was shirtless. And it was no more exercise, and it was just hats. Like, I don't know why my shoes came off. I hate feet. I hate feet. I hate being bare feet. Like, I have socks on right now.
Me too, bro. I always wear socks.
I put my socks on. Always. Like, unless I'm in the pool. Like, that was me feeling myself, because that was out of my comfort zone. You know what I mean? But I just never felt like I was a heartthrob or a sex symbol or better looking than anybody. That's just not.
When did you start? When did there go another one? He got another one.
Here we go.
Got to him.
Here we go, man. Look, that's a different photo shoot, but that one was intentional, I think.
When did you start to notice though that I'm getting a little bit more attention from women than the average guy, or have you not noticed it?
I think it was not. It was in Survivor's Remorse.
Okay.
It was during Survivor's Remorse when it was like two specific things that kind of made me feel that way. And it was, I went down to Facebook because I was trying to figure out what the heck was going on with Instagram. Like, when Facebook bought them, Instagram changed entirely and like they started doing algorithms and stuff. And I was like, all right, how does this thing work? Because it's not what I'm used to. And they were like, well, let's just take a look at your stuff first. And they were like, oh, the only people who follow you were like 18 to 35 year old women. They was like, that's it. I was like, what?
Wow.
Like, no wonder the only pictures that get likes are the sexy ones. Like, if I'm doing regular stuff, you know what I mean? They getting bypassed. But like, as soon as I post something like me cooking, like in the kitchen with my shirt off, then all of a sudden it's like through the roof. And I'm like, oh, no wonder. I see. I see. You know what I mean? So it was that. And it was like just going around meeting fans and engaging and everything. It was way different than the demographic I was expecting. I was thinking more so like LeBron fans would be watching the show.
Gotcha. But
really, it was like married women in Atlanta were the only people watching the show. You know,
that's
so
crazy.
It was, yeah. It was a couple of little wake up calls there.
So when did the acting bug come around? When did you decide like, yo, I think I want to get into acting and try this thing?
Well, my sister did it when we were really young, and I got into it because of that. So I started when I was like 4 or 5 years old, but I never took it seriously. I would say even like we moved to LA to pursue acting when I was 11, and I still didn't really take it seriously. It kind of was just like a thing I did when I wasn't in school to me. And I didn't get the bug really, where I had that itch where I felt like I needed to be doing it until maybe 20 years old, 21, something like that.
Wow. And then did you take any
A lot of time, I was just chilling. It was just happening, but, you know, not rapidly. Like, nothing was really, there was no ball that was rolling. It was kind of just like whenever something comes up, whether it was a commercial or a play or, you know, a little guest spot on a TV show, I was real nonchalant about it until I was 20. Then I was like, I need a better coach. I need a better agent. I need, you know what I mean? That's when I started hustling. That's when I started grinding.
Hey, that's something interesting because I'm always in that dilemma when it comes to representation, when it's like, are they doing enough for me? What was it about your agent that you had when you first got to LA that you was like, I need a better agent? What was happening to make you get to that?
Honestly, it was just like natural growth. It was it wasn't that they fell off, it's just that I had outgrew them literally. I was with a child agent and then I became an adult and I was like, I can't do what I need to do with this agent. I could have stayed with the same agency. I was at Abrams Artists. I loved Abrams Artists and I could have stayed there, but the agent that I was with was telling me like, hey, I'm leaving and I'm going to Paradigm and I can take, you know, 12, 16 different people with me as like my talent to Paradigm. And she was saying how much more they could do for me where I was in my career, but she personally couldn't do it. So she was like, you know, if you're willing to go, I'll take you with me to Paradigm and then I will introduce you to adult agents who can take it from here. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. You know, I don't know anybody else at Abrams. So it's not necessarily the company that I love, it's you. So
right.
If you're gonna go, then like, I'm gonna go with you, you know? And that's that type of evolution is how I've gotten to where I am now. Like, I went from Paradigm the same way. I went from Paradigm to CAA the exact same way.
Nice. Yeah, because I want to do a rundown, because I didn't even do a rundown of some of your credits. So you on easily one of my favorite shows on TV right now,
The
Boys.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Straight up, bro.
The Boys, they airing right now. Like, I think we got an episode tomorrow coming out.
Hey, straight up, man. The Boys. Man, fire. We gonna get into that later. I don't even want to touch on it yet. But
yeah.
The Boys, Survivor's Remorse, Shaft, with Samuel Jackson, The Banker, also with Samuel Jackson, Almost Christmas, Independence Day 2. When do you feel like the ball started rolling for your career?
I think the ball started rolling right around Survivor's Remorse. The first TV show that I was like a series regular in was Level Up on Cartoon Network, but everything could have stopped right there, you know? And they kind of did. Like, there was a little bit of a pause in between Level Up and like whatever that next stage was. And it ended up being film. It was like When the Game Stands Tall kind of started things rolling. But to be honest with you, I did a pilot for Nickelodeon called Summer Camp that didn't get picked up. Everybody in the industry saw this pilot.
Wow.
Every like producer, casting director, every audition I went on, I would say for a year, maybe a year and a half, referenced that pilot for some reason. It was like, man, we loved you in the summer camp pilot. I'm thinking people don't even see pilots. I'm like, how did y'all, how is everyone aware of this? You know? But that was the thing that kind of like kept momentum. I kept getting called in and they were like, oh, they loved you in the summer camp pilot. They want to see you for this show, or they want to see you for that show, or they were considering you for this movie. And I'm like, this is the first time I'm hearing considering. What do you mean considering? Like, I haven't even met these people. You know, I didn't know that was a part of the dialogue. I didn't know. You know, I never knew what packaging was or all these things. And but that was kind of where it started. And that was right around 20, 21 years old.
Wow, that's amazing, bro. How was it Level Up? Because when I was going through your IMDb, I didn't know about it. What was that show exactly, and how did that come about?
That was it was a movie at first, and it was these two writers, Dave and Derek, who were really into like video games and comic books and stuff. And their kids were pretending that the games that they were playing were coming to life, and they're like running around the living room and like fighting these monsters from these video games. So they made that into a movie. And they sold it to Cartoon Network, and that's what we shot. And they ended up taking the movie to a series, and we did two seasons of that. And that's just kind of how it came up. That was the concept of the show, was like a video game that these kids play comes to life, and it's up to them to like keep it from destroying the things that they love, you know, real Cartoon Network-esque. And it, right. It was a hell of fun, though. Dang, I had so much fun on that show. But yeah, you know, it was like a simple concept that we were able to grab and run with it. And it made me feel as an actor like I had something to bring to the table other than like what my acting coach was saying or what I was reading on the page. Like now all of a sudden I felt like I could make choices and that my decisions mattered. And, you know, how I felt about wardrobe actually plays a part in this role. Like all those things started to make sense because I was finally on a show regularly. And that makes a big, big difference in your confidence and you know, your expansion, like your mind, what you realize you're able to do once you book a role.
Right. Yeah, I'm glad you just said all that, because I was just about to ask you, what did you learn from that show that prepared you for Survivor's Remorse? But I think you just kind of answered it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was that.
Do you still use an acting coach today or not anymore?
I would love to. I'm 100%. Four acting coaches, but the coach that I had passed away early last year. And I just haven't found one. I just haven't been to another coach since. And it's not because, you know, I don't feel like no one else can teach me anything. It's just, I haven't found anyone that I had that connection with, like I had with him. His name was Richard Browner. He was in Studio City. He was awesome. And I heard somebody like his apprentice took over his studio, but it just, you know, it wasn't the same. Like I wouldn't do private coaching lessons with his people then. So like now I'm like, all right, I just need somebody that I share that same feeling with that I had with Richard. And then I'll be right back at it.
Man, that's dope. Hey, do you know a Broadway actor named Ephraim Sykes? Do you know Ephraim Sykes?
I don't think so. Mm-mm.
He one of my close homeboys, but y'all energy is so similar. He's about to play Michael Jackson on Broadway.
Wow, that's dope.
Yeah,
that's dope.
Yeah, but we grew up together. We went to high school together. But I just talking to both of y'all, because he did an episode too. I love to get y'all two in a room one of these days, man, just to chop it up, because I feel like y'all like kindred spirits almost, just like y'all vibe and energy, yeah, and just y'all perspective and thinking on life.
I'm down for sure. Yeah, we can never get it together. I'm with it.
Yeah, straight up. So Survivor's Remorse, how did that audition come about? And did you think you were even going to book it, the fact that it was like the lead of a TV show and, you know, and all of that stuff like that?
Right. Well, with Level Up, it was totally different because the pressure was off. It was like TV movie, one-time thing, do this real quick and get out, turn it to a series. It was like, you know, a series regular fell into my lap and I had to figure out what to do with it. Survivor's Remorse, that was the role that everybody in Hollywood was aware of, that every one of my peers had interest in, and I knew it. So I felt the pressure of like booking this role is a thing, you know what I mean? Like people want this, and that I felt that pressure for the first time with that. The first few auditions were fantastic. Like I auditioned for that maybe six or seven times. I would say the first three, The first three were fantastic.
Right.
It was the testing process that started to throw me off. And it was because like I would feel great after my first test, and then I wouldn't hear anything for a week. And then they'd say, like, we need you to come back in and test again. And I was like, okay, cool. You know, what are the notes? Like, how did y'all feel? Whatever. And they're like, no, you were great. Just do the same thing. I'm like, all right, cool. So I would do like the same thing, but different. You know, that's kind of like how, that's what we live by as actors, same thing, but different. And I would go back and test again. It would be in a whole new room of people. Wow. Like the same casting director, same producers, but now me and the 15 other guys who were there last week, it's a totally different set of 15.
Wow.
And you could take it like one or two ways. You can either feel good about that, or you could feel like, all right, I was good, but not good enough. And that's kind of what it felt like, you know, because it happened three times. Like I went in and tested three times with three different groups.
Wow, of people, I didn't even all know about tested that many times.
10 or 15. Oh my gosh, man, it's crazy. Like Ron Rico said the same thing, because he was in Atlanta. He got booked before I did, and he would fly out to LA for these tests. So, you know, I would see Reek, and I'm like, oh, good to see you again. He's like, oh, yeah. And then, you know, today we got Erica here as well, who was my sister on the show, Erica Ash, and she's testing too. She would get booked from that test, wouldn't come back for the next test. Wow. Rico would come back because the chemistry between Cam and Reggie needed to be tight. So I would see Rico again in a whole new set of 15 guys. So I'm like, look, man, I'm sick of this. I'm like, I'm not coming back out here for another test. Y'all seen what I can do at this point five times in person, five times. So like, what's the problem? You know what I mean? Why don't y'all go do some more tests? And if you see something that you feel like you like more, then we can come back and do something a little more discreet. But like doing these big 3-hour tests with all these people in and out of these rooms is crazy. Like it's crazy. So I started to get really discouraged. And eventually I was talking to my mom about it. And she was like, you know, if you're going to go in for one more test, then you got to make sure that this is the test that you show them that you're the person. And I was like, I got nothing left. And I kind of just went in, honestly, not giving a fuck. I was like, I don't even care no more. This is what they're going to get. And if they ask me to come in for another test, my answer is going to be no. And that was the one that I ended up booking the role on.
Yeah, of course.
Sometimes you just got to let go of it. You know what I mean? Sometimes you just got to be like, whatever happens, happens, man. Clearly, I'm out of control here. So whatever y'all feel is what it's going to be.
Straight up. Hey, I always tell people, when you don't care, that's when you book your shit.
That's when you book. It's true.
Anything I've ever booked is when I was like, man, fuck this audition. I'm going to go in and do me. If they don't like it, fuck them. Fuck everybody. Fuck their mama. Fuck their daddy. I'm out of here. And they're like, that's what we wanted. Thank you. It's like they want to be disrespected.
Bro, it's true. It's so true, man. It was the same thing with The Boys. I was pissed in my audition with The Boys. I was so pissed. I did not want to do that. And they loved it. They loved it.
That's crazy. Boy, I was going to ask you about that, because where you're at in your career now, do you still audition, or is it offers, or do you kind of choose what you want to audition for? Like, where are you at in that process right now?
I'm somewhere in between. Like, I feel like, you know, there's certain projects that come across and sometimes they're just a straight out offer. And they're like, you know, this is the offer. This is how much they want to pay. This is how long it's going to be. This is who you're going to be in it with. What do you think? And sometimes my answer is yes. Sometimes it's no. Like, I'm in that position where I'm able to you know, get the whole picture up front and decide if I want to be in it or not. And then there's other times where they're saying, you know, this is early on and this is going to be Steven Spielberg. He wants to see people. Like, you willing to go in? And I'm like, hell yeah. Like, I don't even know what it is, but I'm still like, yeah, I'll go. Sometimes it's just a matter of this person wants to make a movie, but they don't have a script yet. They just want to talk to people. You want to go have a meeting? And like, I'll go do those things as well. And then sometimes it's just an old fashioned casting director remembered me from something. They want to see how I would, you know, portray a certain character. And I go in and read for casting. Like, it's all over the place. Every door that I've walked through has kind of opened up another lane of being able to find ways of you know, excelling in my career, though. Right. I will say that.
I was going to ask, how beneficial do you think general meetings are? Anybody don't know, a general meeting is when you meet with a casting director or producer and you just sit down and talk and you're not really talking about shit. So this is but how beneficial have they been for you? Because I remember I went to a general meeting at Disney one time, and I'm sitting in this casting lady office, And she's talking to me like, listen, I don't have anything to put you in. You seem like a nice guy, but I really have zero, you see what I'm saying? So I was like, why the fuck am I here right now? But for you, right. That's just my experience. What's been your experience with general meetings?
It's 50-50. I think general meetings are always worth going on, but they don't always lead to anything. Mm. I've had some of those meetings, you know, where I'm leaving a room and they're like, look, man, we love you. Like, we think this is great. Honestly, I just wanted to meet you, but we just have nothing to place you in. You know, if something comes up, then we'll give you a call and you never hear back from that person. But then that's also happened. And then I did hear back from that person and it was something very specific. They're like, this is coming up. You're the person. So you let us know what you want to make this happen and we can try to do it together. Like, so it's been both sides. You know what I mean? But then there's also been generals where I've met with like a producer, ended up doing a movie with the producer later. And I just hear through the grapevine that something else is coming because that person just loved my personality enough to say like, look, I don't care what else you need on screen. You're going to like working alongside Jesse because of who he is.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like he's like, you know, they just be saying stuff like, yo, it's fun. He's light. He's professional. You're not going to get no diva shit with him. Like, it's all just going to be cool. And the work environment is going to be great. So, like, you want a stress-free work environment, then, like, hire my boy. So, I've seen those come from general meetings, too. You know, even though I didn't really know these people that well, they felt like just from a general meeting, us kicking it, laughing, talking about Coachella, stuff like that, in an hour-long meeting has led to, like, multiple projects, you know?
Hey, this is a running theme I've had on all these. I've interviewed Jackie Long so far. I've had a few people on so far, right? Jackie, a great dude, man. We had a really good episode.
I'm sure, Jackie. Wow, man. Yeah, that's my boy, though.
Yeah, we had a good one. Have you been auditioning during COVID? Because my team hasn't sent me it. When I tell you zero. You see the
what?
Zero auditions.
Wow.
Since March. How many you've been on so far? Right, or self-tapes or whatever.
Ballpark 2025.
I'm firing everybody right off this goddamn everybody getting fired, man. Hey, bro. I'm telling you, zero, dog. Zero. Ain't nobody called me. They ain't called to check on me and my family. They don't give a, bruh. I'm doing a podcast because no one gives a fuck about sending me anywhere.
Dang.
I'm doing a podcast because I really wanted to do this podcast. But the
right,
point
right,
is,
of course.
Nobody has hit me up about anything.
Wow, Jay. That's a trip. Because I feel like people have been really proactive since this started because everybody's like neck is on the line. You know, all these companies are downsizing. Every casting company is downsizing. Every agency is downsizing. So people are working. So like that's a surprise for me. Hey, you think it has anything to do with the MacGyver schedule though? Because y'all work. When y'all work, you work a lot.
We do. You know what I think? I think no one likes me at my agency. I don't think my management likes me.
That ain't it. They can hate you, but if you book and they gonna send you some stuff.
I do think when it comes to TV. It's the MacGyver thing, mm-hmm. But I'm sure you have auditioned for films too, though, during this time period.
Right. Yeah.
I haven't auditioned, sure. But nigga, I ain't auditioned for a voiceover. Don't nobody. I'm gonna take that back. My voiceover agents, the only people that have sent me anything, but it was for like a fucking KY jelly commercial. So it was some shit I wasn't gonna do. Like, hey, you wanna...
okay? So, all right. Look, man. You know, KY. Hey, KY sales too.
KY sales too.
I would rather do a KY voiceover than a KY commercial with my face on it.
That's true. I always be worried about the people because the people that do like them herpes commercials and they gotta look like they're so happy that they have herpes, yep. But they got control of the herpes. I'm like, man, they goddamn happy.
That's a catastrophic situation to be in. Nobody you meet with herpes is that happy.
But they
gotta make you happy about the medicine at least.
Hey, jeez. So how did Independence Day 2 come about?
That was another one of those networking relationship type deals. That was, I was training for season 2 or 3 of Survivor's Remorse. I can't remember which one. And I was in the gym. My trainer trains Harold Closer, who is a, hey, there he is. My trainer trains this guy named Harold, who was a composer and a producer of that movie. He's like a business partner of Roland, who's the director, the creator of Independence Day. And, you know, Will Power is his name. Will's the kind of person who's always like, oh, let me introduce you to this guy. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I got a training session right after you with this person. Let me connect y'all to. He's like that. He's always been like that. Whether there's benefit to it or not. I met so many people at that gym that I would never, ever need to know. But this time he was like, I'm going to introduce you to Harold. And, you know, they did Independence Day. They're doing something else. It wasn't Independence Day. He was going to introduce me to him about something else.
Wow.
And I met him. And we just like laughed for like 10 minutes. And then I had to leave because they were starting a gym session. And then Harold told Will that they were doing Independence Day. And Will just, you know, not even waiting for him to say anything, jumps up and says like, oh, you got to get Jesse in there. Oh, you need Jesse. You know, you're talking about young Will Smith. Like, you should get Jesse, blah, blah, blah. And Harold's like, chill. Like, that's what I was saying. Like, we want to meet him. We want to talk to him about it. I just, you know. Of course, I said, hell yeah, I want to meet and talk to y'all about it. Y'all let me know what the setup is like, and we'll make it happen. And my agent at the time also used to work with Will. So they had like a thing that had nothing to do with this new movie. But, you know, as many stars that could align as possible, like they just seemed to be falling in place. So I went and I just sat with Roland. We sat in his house in the living room and we just talked for a minute. We like laughed about some stuff. We literally, I would say at an hour and a half of time, we talked about the movie for maybe like 7 minutes.
Wow.
And then after that, they directly offered me the role in that movie.
Ooh.
Directly beast. Offered it to me. It was just one of the, I mean, I didn't do anything.
Now
I felt like I didn't work for it. You know what I mean? I honestly did. I was like, yeah, I was working out, but I got here and I just talked to them. But I did express to them, you know, what I liked about that movie and the things that Will had brought to it, what I felt, how I felt about the storyline and the new one and stuff like that. I spoke really in depth about those things. But for the most part, you know, those are guys who are sitting back and they're saying, look, we did it. Like, we've done it. Anything we do now is for fun. So we want to surround ourselves with people that we can have fun with, you know. And that was just one of those things.
Was there any hesitation for taking that role because it was such a huge movie, or you was just like, I'm ready to go?
Nah, I think I felt pretty good. I was ready to go. Being on Survivor's Remorse whipped me into shape. Like, there, I don't think there's any project that could be more challenging than that. So any, you know, no matter the size or the weight, and like my dad kind of felt that. He would tell me all the time. He's like, you know, stepping into Will's shoes, blah, 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 blah. Like, we weren't really sure if Will was going to be in it or not. We didn't have a clear answer. And he was like, you know, whether he's in it or not, like, how do you feel? And I'm just like, honestly, it doesn't matter. It literally doesn't matter. I just did a 3-page monologue last week on Survivor's Remorse. Like, that's not even going to be in this movie. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, we just did a whole 1.5-page oneer. Like, you know, people who are not in the industry probably don't even know what we're talking about right now. But, like, it literally can't get any more challenging than when the stuff that we did on Survivor's Remorse. It just can't. Like, physically, it can't.
Right.
So, Stepping into any other role, I felt comfortable.
Yeah. I tell people, you know, being the number one on the call sheet of a 1-hour show was Survivor's Remorse. I can't remember if it was 30 minutes.
We were half hour.
But being number one on the call sheet, it's a difficult task, especially when you're in almost every scene or whatever. It's like that. Yep. Because people don't, they just see a 30-minute show. They don't realize it took 5 to 8 days to film that one 30-minute show, and waking up 5:30 in the morning, you know, to get the hair and makeup, and not going getting done to 5-6 in the evening if you're lucky, you know.
Y'all were lucky with that. I see that happen on MacGyver when I would come visit, or when I was on it, and y'all would have 12-hour days, and it seemed unfamiliar. We were doing 16-17-hour days, and then we had 8 pages to learn. You know what I mean? Because also, half hour, you're looking at what, a 40-page script? Our pages would be 65, and we would be talking super fast. Like, we were just riddling off words. So, you know, the study that went into learning the next day's work after a 16-hour day, bro, I would wake up in the middle of the night. I'd go to sleep at like 10. I'd eat, go to sleep at 10, wake up at 2, study from 2 to 4, go back to sleep, wake up at 6, and then go to work.
Wow.
It's crazy.
You did that for what, 5 seasons?
Crazy. 4.
4 seasons. Whew, man. 4 seasons. Yeah, people don't understand, like, the it's not only a physical toll, but the mental toll that can take on you. And I know only because I did Rush Hour. So, I mean, we only did, you know, we did one season. It got canceled during the commercial break. But, I was taking a shit. And they was like, your show's gone. I said, nigga, can I watch it?
Where you at? Yeah, stay there. Nah, that's messed up.
Stay there. I said, well, shit, well, since you told me, I will. Motherfucker, I was naked. My socks was on, though. I kept the
socks on. Right, you remember the socks was on.
Yeah. But Rush Hour was 13 to 15 hour days every day, and that was a 1 hour show. So yeah, but I said all that to say I know the mental and physical toll being number one on the call sheet. So I can only imagine doing that for 4 seasons. You know.
Right.
How did you deal with bad guest stars? On Survivor's Room? Because I know on MacGyver, we're fortunate to have a lot of good guest stars, but every once in a while you get some. You like, man, where did they find this person? So how did you deal with that?
To be honest with you, man, bad guest stars and Survivor's Remorse. I would say after the first season. The first season, bad guest stars, you know, everyone's kind of trying to be polite and all this and that. But, like, second season, we realized how stressful bad guest stars make the environment and then how long that lasts after they're gone. So it was a very unforgiving set. I'm, like, the nicest person on the set. But, like, I ain't gonna say who, but, like, some of my castmates were not as forgiving. A lot of our directors and pretty much all of our writers were not as forgiving.
Right.
And everybody was kind of always on set. There would be like at least 3 writers there. Showrunner was there all the time. And the director, of course, you know, like, and we were tight as a cast. So like, if I wasn't working, more than likely I would still show up for at least an hour or two.
Oh,
you
nice.
Know what I'm saying? It was that kind of thing. So when somebody bombed, everybody saw it. And then the next day would always be like, whose call was that? You know what I mean? Like, cause I know that the casting process for this show is not easy. How did that just happen? You know?
What would be their
excuse?
These
scenes are very specific, huh? What would be their excuse? Who knows? Well, they killed it in the audition. Like, I guess they were just nervous. It was always stuff like that. We're like, no, they weren't nervous. They were unprepared. You know, like the same speeches that we got all of season one of like, you need to be on your stuff. You need to be prepared. We like this show to be verbatim. There should be no excuse. If you need more hours, then we'll give you more hours. If we need to change the schedule, we need to change the schedule. It was all these things that they were saying to us. So we were prepared. We never fell off. So when a bad guest star came in, we looking at them like, what happened? You didn't tell them? You didn't tell them they need to learn their lines? All that shit you said to me for a whole year, all the stress I went through, like now all of a sudden I'm showing up and I know everything for today, tomorrow, and the next day. This dude got one scene. Like, how did that slip through the cracks? You know what I mean? We had 2 people on set who were just there to run lines with either us or someone else so that when they said action, everybody was ready.
Wow.
Because we had no time to waste.
We can't afford that at MacGyver. We don't have enough money in the budget.
that was their priority, though. Like, we took cuts from other places so that those things can happen so that when it was time to shoot, we could actually get the words out. You know what I mean? Because it was so dialogue heavy, that just became a priority of theirs, you know, for them. So when somebody fell off, I'm like, well, where the 2 people are supposed to be running lines in this trailer? Oh, he said he was good. No, we don't listen to anybody walking on the show saying that they good.
Straight
That's
up.
Not how this works. And you know that. You know what I mean? So like, it would be hostile. It would be hostile. And we didn't like that. So it didn't happen often, but when it did, it was a mess. It was a mess.
Hey, man, I know how it is, man. I remember I was doing a scene one time, and I'm like, bruh, first of all, you've been sitting in your trailer for, I don't know, 10 hours. Yeah, 10
hours. What was you doing?
What have you been doing this whole time, bruh? You have fucking 3 words to say. You've been sitting in the trailer for 10 hours. God damn. You can't say, here's your butter? Like, nigga, just say, here's your butter and get the fuck, like, come on, bruh. So I get it.
Man,
so
we had somebody ruin a scene who didn't have no lines, Jay.
He breathed wrong? What happened?
I could still see his face right now.
What
I will never forget this man. We were shooting like a little party thing, like a little party scene, and it was supposed to be live and fun and festive. They needed the energy high. So their thoughts were, it's not going to just work with the blocking and the words. We need the camera to always be moving. So this has to be a oneer. Then the director was like, it has to be a oneer. So we're like, all right, cool. We're ready for oneers. Let's go. What is it going to be? Set the shot up, blah, 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 blah. The shot ends on the front door being open to this new person. The new person doesn't even say anything. Literally just gives a reaction. That's it. We did the whole thing. Get to the door, open the door. I swear to you, I kid you not, this nigga's back was turned. I said, hold up. I was like, okay, hold up.
This nigga did what it is.
I had to take a moment. Yo, and then, oh, was it me? What you mean, was it you? Like, dog, I couldn't. I was like, you know what? It happens. Let's just put somebody outside with them. You know, they can cue them, all that kind of stuff. That should have been done in the first place. That was our mistake. Let's put somebody outside. It happened like 4 or 5 times. His back wasn't turned, but every time they opened the door, he would either look and like start laughing because he was nervous, or like as soon as the door would open, he'd go, oh, my bad. Can we do it again? I'm like, yo, you don't realize doing it again means doing the whole scene again. You don't have to say anything. You got to give us a look. So you can only imagine like the next day, probably for like the next week, they was like, we're going to do a wonder. And the cast would be like, no, we not. Let us see if we're going to do a one. You know what I mean? Like, we was hot. Like, you can't do that. Those kind of mistakes can't be made.
Yeah, man, you can't drop, man, the ball, late, man. When you get into
tired.
Those, right. Yeah, and when you get into those situations, if you're doing a guest star role, like, you got to come prepared, man. I mean, you have to be prepared because, like, the series regular cast members may could get away with dropping lines and stuff like that. They've proven themselves, you know, and they're there every day, and they got way more shit to learn.
But I feel like walking into somebody else's show, why wouldn't you want to be impressive? You know what I mean? Why wouldn't you want to be overly prepared, or not even necessarily impressive, just prepared, just ready? Why wouldn't you? Isn't the goal to get there? You know, like, wouldn't you want them to say, dang, that person was so good, maybe we should bring him back? Like, isn't that the goal?
I thought it was.
I would think so.
Right.
I thought
that's what you were doing. But you know what? But that's just like some people that just want to be professional background actors. You know,
true.
And shout out to all the background.
Yeah, like, I'm cool with this.
You know, but there's some people that's just like, I'm just here to get a check. It's better than working at Walmart. Shout out to all the Walmart employees.
Every time you throw shade, you're gonna shout them out too. All right, cool.
Now you see how I operate.
Good to know.
I throw shade and then I shout out, hey, but shout out to all the plumbers.
Right. We appreciate you. We love you. That's for sure.
So you've been fortunate to do 2 movies with Samuel L. Jackson. The first one was Shaft, I believe. Shaft came first.
Yeah.
How did that come about, the Shaft? What was your audition process? If it was an audition process. Hey,
yay, there you go.
Look at that. We on our job round here.
We not fucking around.
I got a sign. I got this sign from Target.
Yeah, you got the sign. Like, I need a sign. I ain't got no sign in my house with my name on it. Dang.
So how did Shaft come about, man?
Shaft was one of my agents was really excited about the rewrite. He loved the script. He loved the producer, John Davis, who, you know, is a people's person. So he's like, you got to meet with him, talk with him, and just, you know, see if y'all connect. And we did, but I still needed to audition for it, for, you know, if nothing else, to at least have Sam see something. And that means something to him. Sam is like, y'all pick, you know, y'all top 20, and then I want to see y'all 20. He's that type of actor. So, you know, Vicky Thomas was casting, and she's a wonderful one, like an incredible casting agent. She's one of my favorites here in LA. So when I heard she was casting, I was like, perfect.
Hey, dude, wait a minute. Hold on. Let me stop you real quick. Kim Coleman, did she cast you for Survivor's Remorse?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kim ain't cast me in shit. And this is another running theme. Kim done cast every black actor in Hollywood except me. I'm trying to figure out what the fuck I'm doing wrong that Kim Coleman is casting literally every black actor. Anyways, continue, man. Go shout out to Vicky.
I can give you some tidbits about Kim if you want. They're all good things, but it might help you.
Please tell me, brother, because I need
it. Yeah, we'll talk about that later, though.
Offline, but, okay.
So Vicky, like, I call her. I'm like, you know, what are they looking for? What can I do? You know, what do I need to prepare? What should I focus on? What should I not? And she just kind of gave me a rundown. They wanted me to prepare a lot more pages than I had time to. And I asked them if I could just move it back, you know, a day or two at least. I had my daughter with me because I got split custody of my daughter. And usually when she's with me, like, I don't do anything else. You know, I try to put everything off until when I'm not with her. So she has my undivided attention. And I was explaining that to Vicky, and she's like, this is it. And we need you to come in, like, tomorrow. And, you know, like, everybody else is going to be here, too. Like, Tim Story, director, is going to be here. John Davis, the producer, is going to be here. And, you know, like this is it. And I was like, I'm going to try my best. You know, I went in an hour early. I sat with Vicky and just, like, let her hear me a couple times and just got a couple of notes from her. Went downstairs. I was the first person there, obviously, because I was an hour early. I went downstairs, and I was just preparing in my head to not fuck up. That's really all it is at that point. You know what I mean? Like, the only thing that you could do that they would hate is that if you fuck up. Like, you could do your thing. You still might not get it, but as long as you don't fuck up, you're fine. So I just was trying not to ruin it. And, you know, they called me in first. I literally sat right next to the door that the casting was taking place in. And I saw Vicky go in. I saw Tim go in. I saw his assistant go in. I saw John and his assistant. I saw everybody walk in the room. And then they called me up first. I walked in there, and Sam's sitting dead center in the room on the couch with his legs crossed. It's a basketball shorts and a t-shirt. And
Was his balls hanging out of the basketball shorts? I didn't see this
damn
nigga.
Damn near. Because Sam wears small shorts.
Exactly. You know what I mean? I knew it. I just seen him in some
like golf shorts. Like tennis player shorts.
He got them old grown man balls. He's seasoned balls.
Old grown man balls, man. But yeah, he was sitting just like that, but with his legs crossed. But the thing is, I watched everybody go in the room. I literally watched them go in the room. I said hi to everybody that went in the room. So my first thing out of my mouth when I walked in was, did he come in through the window? Like, how the fuck did he get in here? And everybody started laughing. Like, everybody fell out laughing, including him. And he's like, don't worry how I got in here. You know, let's do this thing. Straight to business. And I was like, perfect. You're right. Let me get my shit together. You threw me for a loop for a second, but I'm back. And, like, we just did the audition, and we had a lot of fun. We was laughing, you know, all that kind of stuff. And then that was it.
Let me tell you what I realized about Shaft. When I watched Shaft, because I had this – I write. So I don't know if you know I write, but
– I do. Write, yeah, we talked about it.
Yeah, and so – I had this project that my management team were super interested in. They still are interested in it. So, you know, I'll be in my producer bag also. And so I was like, let me watch Shaft because I wanted to see you because I had this role for this particular script. So I was like, I want to see if Jesse is funny. You know, that's what you see what I'm saying? So I'm watching like as a producer. Let me see.
Right.
You know, because I'm a stand-up comedian. So I'm like, I'm judging.
Now you critical.
I am. And I was like, oh, and I was pleasantly surprised, man. That's what made me enjoy the movie so much more. Because the Shaft movie is dope, man. It's a funny, cool movie. The stakes are high. Yeah, but I was like, yo, Jesse is killing it in here with the comedy. And that's what was surprising and refreshing. I'm like, this nigga good looking, god damn it. He's nice. He's funny. Nigga got a strong hairline. What the fuck? He's incredible. But yeah, bro, have you learned anything from Sam since working with him or from working with him?
So much. I learned so much about professionalism and preparation and inclusiveness. I can briefly like break those things down. Like in terms of professionalism, I will say I don't think there's anyone on this planet more professional than Samuel L. Jackson, period. You know, like he doesn't need any HR classes. He's not saying anything inappropriate unless he's intending to. Like there's no slip of the tongue. There's no Sam doesn't know his lines today. He needs some more time. there is no Sam's running late today to hair and makeup. Can we buy him 5 minutes? Like, that doesn't exist. You know what I mean? They call out first team. Sam is usually the first person there on set. Like, it's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy because you know he's doing so much. You know, in between, he's still reading like three other movies and a book, and he's listening to a podcast, you know what I mean? And he's calling his wife, and he's learning his lines for this and the other movie that he's doing at the same time. But he's still that professional. And it's kind of mind-blowing. Like, I couldn't even fathom how he was working that way. And then you kind of meet the people that he works with, and you can see, like, when he stand up, they stand up. You know what I mean? Like, everything is working in tangent, and it's really, really impressive.
Wow.
But he makes everybody feel important. He makes sure everybody's doing their job as well. You know, he's saying, like, hey, I'm Samuel Jackson, and I'm this prepared. You should be, too. Because at the end of the day, you're not Samuel Jackson yet, but you won't be unless you do this, you know? And it's really admirable to hear someone at that level talk like that, because it could be the opposite. It could be, I show up whenever I want. I'm Samuel Jackson, but it's not that. It's first. I'm Samuel Jackson. Yeah, that's what you see all the time. Right. That's what, you know, that's the common thing that we see. But with him, it was, I'm here first. I know my lines. I know your lines. I know why the camera's going over there. I understand why the DP needs the light over here. Like, I know all of this. And you should too. You know what I mean? So it was like inspiring to just be in a room with him time after time. And, you know, he's not one to hand out compliments at all. So when he would look at me and be like, good shit, I'll be like, oh!
Right.
We made it. I was so hyped.
Right.
I try to keep it cool. Like, thanks, man. I appreciate it. You know what I mean?
Nigga, so we made
walk
it.
Walk out and be like, yeah, for real. I'm so hyped, bro. Man.
And what do you mean by the exclusiveness guy. when you said Samuel Jackson? You also learned about exclusiveness.
No, inclusiveness.
Oh, inclusive.
Meaning like inclusiveness, just meaning everybody who's on set feels important.
Gotcha.
You know, he would draw all that in. Like, somebody would do something that we all know is not that easy to do. Like, maybe everybody's cold and we need a heater from 200 yards away, and somehow gets here like that, you know, from a random locations person that you never met. Most of the time, we don't even acknowledge that. We're in our sides. Sam would literally look up and be like, let's give a round of applause for this guy who got this thing over here in like record timing. Right. And that person probably goes home feeling like, yo, like, I can quit now. Samuel Jackson literally made the whole set stop and give me a round of applause for doing this. And like, yeah, I was dying inside, but like, I made it happen. You know what I mean? Because he asked me. But he is like, thank you to this person. Thank you to that person. Thank you to this person. You know, well, like, job well done. Nice work. You know what I mean? Just small acknowledgments about things that usually go over all of our heads. He doesn't miss anything. He doesn't miss anything. Nothing. It's crazy. But he's been in the game for that long, you know.
Was there any intimidation when you first started working with him?
Yes. My first day, there was a little bit of intimidation, but he wasn't even in the scene. I was doing the scene with somebody else, and he showed up for a fitting, which was next to where we were shooting at. So he walks over to the set, watches one take. And, you know, I just talked to him. I was like, hey, man, you know, I'm ready to work with you tomorrow. I'm excited, you know, all that kind of stuff. And his only response was, yeah. But don't let this little motherfucker outshine you in your own movie. And walked out. And I was like, damn.
Shit. Goddamn. Sam J.
He immediately felt the pressure of, like, needing to do well. You know what I'm saying? And then it kind of faded away, like, after a few days, because he is really cool. But, like, that was just his icebreaker. But in that moment, my heart was beating extra fast. I was like, am I losing this battle right now? Like, what's happening? Man, it was a trip.
So the other important movie that you did, which I thought to be a phenomenal movie with him, was called The Banker.
Uh-huh.
How did that come about? Because anyone that don't know, it's about Samuel Jackson, Anthony Mackie using a white dude to buy banks. And it's an incredible film. How did that one come about? That's a fire movie.
Thank you. That was an incredible story. Really deep, really important, really timely. But to be honest with you, I didn't do anything for that. That was Sam sort of putting his neck out for a role that they didn't really have time to find the right person for, but they knew they would need someone that they could depend on. Because it was that character that I played was in too many scenes that were important to push the story along. Even though, like, I wouldn't do or say as much as Anthony or, you know, Anthony or Sam or whatever. But it was just one of those things where, like, the wrong casting could ruin this movie. So Sam kind of just spoke up and said, like, Jesse could do it. And they're like, really? Like, yeah, Jesse could do it. So I got a call and they literally said, hey, Sam said you could do this. Do you want to do it?
Damn.
I was like, well, if Sam said I can do it, then I probably, yeah, let's do it. I'm not going to say no, you know. I didn't even know what it was. I was like, yeah, sure, send it to me. Let me see. And it was The Banker.
Man.
Crazy.
Man, I recommend that to everybody. Anybody that haven't seen that movie, check it out. It's on Apple. Is it
Apple TV?
Apple TV. I got a few more questions, bro, and I'm going to let you go.
What's up, man? Talk to me.
One is, where are you at when it comes to, is the goal to become a movie star or is the goal to pick great roles? That's part of the question. And then the other part is, I know someone like a Michael B. Jordan, even, I don't know if you're familiar with the actor comedian named Tone Bell. But I've heard both of them say that they tell their agents that they don't want to read just for black roles. Like, they want to make sure that they're getting roles that's written for white people also, because they don't want to only just be the lead of a black film or only want to be reading for just the black character. Is that a conversation right. that you have with your representation, or
yeah,
not really concerned about that?
No, that's the thing that, you know, I would say probably around the time that I went to Paradigm that conversation started up, because that's easy for agents to do. So that tends to be what they'll lean on. You know, oh, there's a great role for a black male, but stop, hold up right there. You know what I mean? Like, I know where this is going. I see a pattern here. Let's make sure that we changing this up. Like, yeah, I want those too. Yes, don't hold back on those when you call me, but that's not all you should be looking for. You know what I mean? Like, my face shouldn't pop up in your head only when you see those things come across your desk. So that's kind of what that conversation is like. But all in all, to be honest with you, the goal is not necessarily to be, you know, a movie star or anything along those lines. It's more so just to have more control over my time within this industry. It's like, where do I want to spend majority of my time? You know, am I looking to be doing more roles and trying to prove that I can do something different here? Or am I going to be doing television shows about stories that I don't necessarily care as much about versus other things? It's like, I want control of that time. Like, Will Smith has control of his time.
Right.
You know what I mean? I see people tell me all the time, like, yeah, but he's not my favorite actor. I'm like, I don't care who your favorite actor is. Will has control of his time. If he's saying, all right, I'm going to spend 6 months next year doing something, whatever that 6 months is that he's doing, it's like the number one thing he'd want to be doing. It's not, number one didn't work out, so let me try two and three. Like, it's always number one. You know what I'm saying? For him, I want that.
Wow. I never thought about that. Time is so important to me personally. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So to get to a position where you have control over it and be like, no, I want to have 4 months out of the year to do a film. And, you know,
right
in the industry,
and everyone makes it happen.
Yeah, that's big. Hey, so this is something I want. I bet you through.
Oh, here we go.
I swear. I was like, I didn't even think about it till just now. And I was like, oh yeah, I gotta bring this up because I want you to realize this. First of all, I met you on MacGyver because you're dating my co-star, Tristan Mays. How did you? I want to know how y'all met, and then the other question is: do you realize every black? I'm married, so I exclude me from this.
Okay.
Every black man that I know is furious that you dated her, and they're not.
What,
bro? When I tell you,
I don't know why.
Every nigga I know, they like, man, I like Tristan, but that nigga Jesse dating her. But they don't, but it ain't in like they hate you. It's one of those.
I know.
Damn, like he got him a nice one. He got him one that people really like. People, so how did y'all first meet? And that's how I met you. That's when I realized that you was a cool dude, even from her introducing us.
Right. Well, thank you. Well, we're not anymore, so they're all off the hook. They can go ahead and do their thing.
No!
But let me take it full circle for you, though.
I just gave a big-ass grand introduction.
You did, and I was going to let you finish it, too. But let me take it full circle for you, though. So 13, 14 years ago, we did a commercial together, and we've been friends ever since. And we took that dive into, like, you know, romantic interests right around the time that I met you. We had kind of just started dating, and it just didn't feel right. So we went back to being friends. So, like, now we're kind of, you know, back where we were before then. And, like, we're still cool. We talk, you know, every so often, all that kind of stuff. I think she's back in Atlanta now, all that kind of stuff. But it just, you know, I felt that too, though. What you said about, like, other people in the industry, like, I totally felt that.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Everybody started, because I'm cool with everybody. I just don't hang out with everybody.
Right.
But, like, I'm cool with everybody I met. I don't think I have a squabble, whatever they call it, with anyone.
Quirrel.
You know what I mean? Like, we all cool, but people were different when Tris and I were together. And I knew it was because of her. You know what I mean? But that didn't bother me. Like, I didn't care. I wasn't pressed to, like, rub elbows with people all the time. That's not my thing. You know what I mean? So I didn't really care. But yeah, man. So, like, now we back being cool. So we'll see how the streets are when COVID is over and everybody can go out and hang out again. Now all of a sudden they're gonna be like, Jess, good to see. Like,
hey, bro, because y'all made, first of all, you've made every Negro in Hollywood happy. That's number one. You've made everybody happy.
It's like
But well, y'all was such a pretty couple. I remember y'all came to meet, man, y'all came to meet me, Marlon, and Marlon Wayans.
Oh, yeah.
Me, Marlon Wayans, and my homeboy, Justin. We eating in Atlanta, and y'all pulled up real quick before y'all was finna go do whatever. And I said, this is the most gorgeous couple I have ever seen in my life. I said, it's incredible. Now I'm gonna tell you the craziest thing. I said, I think Jesse's prettier than her. I said, God damn it.
Not in a million
years. I said, how
years.
Is this possible?
In a million years.
Man, but now, okay, so I didn't know that. Well, feel free to still come visit the set of MacGyver if you want to.
I probably will. That's the thing, man. Like, you know, that's just based on, like, the relationship that Tris and I have and just knowing everybody on y'all set now and how cool everybody was, I wouldn't put it past me. If I stopped into Atlanta, I probably would come visit the set of MacGyver. No lie. Because y'all were mad cool. Y'all showed me so much love.
Hey, man, straight up, I can't wait for your episode to air because we didn't even get to it. We didn't even get to it. They going to air it season 5.
Tonight. Yeah.
They airing it tonight?
Today, Thursday, right? Yeah, they usually air right around midnight. Well, technically tomorrow, but
right.
It's tonight.
So we're gonna wrap up on The Boys. Phenomenal show. The storyline, the characters, the special effects. How did you find out about this show? And did you know it was gonna be the hit that it is?
I found out about it when I was shooting Shaft, and it was in the middle of that thing, and my television person was like, hey, you know, we got a self-tape that we think it'd be worth you sending in. A tape for, and here are the sides and this and that. And I looked at it. It's based on a graphic novel. I'm looking at the character, and it was all kind of up in the air. They were like, you know, they're looking at you for either A-Train or the D. And I'm like, all right. So one, they're not even specific about how they want to place me in the show. I wasn't feeling it. It was one of those weeks, and like we all have these weeks on a project where usually everything is pretty much good to go, but there's always a stress week of like locations is tripping, or, you know, we packed too much into this week that we weren't really expecting, or the rain messed us up on Monday, so now Friday is going to be ridiculous. It's always something like that, and that was one of those weeks. And I'm like, I'm not doing this. Like, I have too much to do when I get off work to be worried about another job. I need to focus on this one. You know what I mean? And I couldn't stress that enough. And they kept saying, well, just send in the tape. You know, if you don't like it, then like we won't do it. They were so nonchalant about it, but still pressuring me to do this tape. And I think they were just trying to downplay it because they knew, but I didn't know.
Gotcha.
I had no idea. You know, I didn't know who Eric Kripke was, but they knew Eric Kripke was like Supernatural. You know what I'm saying? Like one of the best in terms of this genre, one of the best shows on television in genre. So I was like, I didn't know any of that. I'm just saying, I don't have the time. I don't have the patience. I can't do it, but I did it. And I absolutely hated it. I asked my parents to help me. They were in Atlanta at the time, you know, just chilling, visiting. And I was like, can y'all help me do the self tape real quick? I'm gonna do it before I go to sleep. I did it. I hated it. I didn't care. And I was like, I'm going to sleep because I got to get up and go to work tomorrow. And they just have to understand that. Man, I woke up, I watched the tape. It was so bad. The tape was so bad. I was like, yeah, I'm not sending this tape in. Just tell them it's not coming. And they called and said, sorry, but he just couldn't do it. And whoever else on the other end said, well, you know, whenever he gets a chance, just have him send something. So I came back the next day. I was more mad the next day that they didn't just let it go.
Right.
So I'm like, fine, you know what? Set the camera, let me do the tape right now. And I had an attitude. I was so angry, man. Like I was so angry that we couldn't just move on from this thing. I did the tape with like the nastiest attitude and they loved it.
Because that because plays into your character.
A-Train is. That's who he is.
That's crazy, bruh. Hey, man.
Oh, man.
When I hear stuff like that, man, I'm like, that wasn't nothing but God, though. It's amazing how you don't know the situations and things that's going on in your life is preparing you or helping you, and you not even knowing it to get the blessing that's coming up.
1,000%. Because I just wanted to walk away from it. You know what I mean? But it was literally preparing me for the only version of that character that would have gotten me that role. All that stuff that led up to it, the way I felt about it. And I was so upset that when they told me they loved it and Eric Kripke wanted to talk to me about it, I didn't even really want to talk. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was bad. He was like, yeah. And here's the thing. John Davis, who was doing Shaft, knows Eric. They're on the phone together at lunch. And John is looking at me. He's saying, I don't know, man. Jesse's kind of pissed right now. He doesn't really want to do it, but I put him on the phone just like jokingly. You know what I'm saying? And I get on the phone. And I'm like, look, man, y'all stressing me out. I'm just trying to work. What's up? Eric's like, man, we loved you. And then I'm like,
right.
Well, let's talk about it.
Straight up, though. You're like, oh, hey, on second hand, you know, what are we talking about?
Yeah. What do you mean? Like, well, elaborate. But it ended up being cool. And Eric ended up being great. He totally understood why I felt that way at the time. And he was like, I just hope you could be that committed to the boys when you get here. And I'm like, that's what it's going to be. You know what I mean? If somebody else called me for something, I'm going to give them the same attitude because I'm trying to be present. That's what y'all want, right? Like, I'm trying to be present. You messing it up. But it worked out, man. That was nothing but God's doing right there.
Do you ever fear they're going to kill you off the show? Is that ever like a fear in the back of your head? Or you like,
really a fear. It's a reality. I mean, if they're going by the graphic novels, eventually I get my head kicked off. That's what happens.
Gotcha.
I don't know if it's going to happen that way. It's definitely not going to happen in the same timeline because it probably would have already happened. But, you know, eventually I think so.
They kick the nigga head off. God damn it.
Eventually I think so.
Hey,
but
man.
I'm cool with it.
Hey, man, you getting it in, bro. Keep doing what you're doing. Like I say, I appreciate you coming on. I started this platform to celebrate living legends and people, I think, making legendary moves. And also, you know, I also know what it's like to not always be able to get on a late night talk show. You know, not always being able to get on Ellen right now. Right. And so the whole point of this is to build this up, something that that the culture owns, you know. So for all the talented people that I know and I'm looking at their moves, to be able to give them a platform to always be able to come on, talk about their projects, talk about whatever thoughts they have going on or, you know, and just have a place to come. So I appreciate you coming on just to even share this information. in your journey, you know, with the people that's going to be watching. So I appreciate you, bro. I just want you to keep doing your thing. You a king, bro. Keep wearing that crown high on your head, man.
Thanks, Jay. I appreciate it too, man. Like, honestly, this is fantastic. We need more people like you. I wish I had the patience to do it. I'll get it one day. I'll get it one day, you know, but like you said, it all goes right back to you, because it's not easy to be in this industry as a young Black man, especially. You know, it's a lot of things are not handed out to us that we kind of have to facilitate for ourselves. So I applaud you for that. And, you know, I wish nothing but the best for you, bro. Hope you're staying safe out there. Hope you're wearing your mask when you go out. If not, I can tell you where to get them, man. You know, we facilitating. So
what you mean? What you said?
Yancia.com. My sister does like face mask, therapeutic face masks.
Say it again so people know.
Yeah, my sister does therapeutic face masks during this pandemic. She has a fashion company, but she's pretty much converted almost entirely to just doing that. And it started just through demand. Like, people kept asking her for specific orders. And she's just like, you know what? I'm just going to do this because it just makes more sense. And people need this more than they need, you know, dresses and blouses and stuff. So this is what I'm going to do. And she's been doing incredible. She's been doing really, really incredible.
And what's the website? What's the website?
Yancia.com.
My bad.
Yancia.com.
Hold on. Spell it one more time. Spell it one more time because I was talking. Go ahead. I was being a nigga.
All right, yeah, exactly. It's Yancia.com, Yancia.com. And man, she does all kinds. They look like this. This is the Black Panther one she made recently. Y'all might not be able to get this one. It's exclusive just for, you know, for your peeps. But
somebody at Disney, man. Somebody at Disney's watching right now, like, about that one.
Go ahead and tell them to call me, man. We straight. Trust me. If you think we ain't got it in order, you
great. Straight up, man.
Yes, sir.
Man. Yes, sir. Appreciate you, bro. Keep doing your thing, man. Keep winning, man. Keep that spirit, bro. And wish you nothing but continued success, bro.
You too, man. I wish you guys the best of luck on y'all next season. I don't know how it's gonna go, but I'm wishing nothing but the best for you.
Hey, man. I'm just trying to stay COVID free. You know.
I hear you. Me too. You and me both.
Straight up, bro. All right, man, I'm gonna let you go. All right. Peace, King.
Peace, bro.